This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on.
You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
I should know it's on.
It's on.
Is it crooked?
Good.
All right, we're going to cut straight to it. So I was in the gym the other day, Steve.
You doing okay? Right? I'm doing excellent. I've been waiting for this one.
So yay! I was in the gym the other day, and I'm 5'8", about 170 pounds of soaking wet, right? So I ain't the biggest guy, but I got a couple muscles, whatever.
Yeah, you.
And so.
You can lift.
Yeah, so it was leg day on Sunday. And
no, hold on. Whoa, rewind.
What?
You do legs?
I do legs. Yeah.
Oh. With weight?
No.
Or you do it with bands?
No, I don't do no bands. I do it with weights, right? So.
Thought you was trying to get that. See, I thought you was trying to get that apple bottom.
No. First off, you should never, with a man, talk about apple bottoms.
That's was neither peach, here nor there. It was peach or apple. I went with apple. I wish like, you I can't say it.
I wish you would have discontinued both options. Anyway, so I'm working on legs.
Yeah, with your bands?
No, with weights, right?
Did you have ankle weights on?
I did not have ankle weights. I don't do none of this stuff y'all be doing. So.
Who's the y'all?
The people at this table.
Oh, okay, cool.
People
at this
table.
All right.
So, all right, doing squats, doing leg press, all this stuff. So I went heavy, right?
He's
so
doing all heavy. The selfie shots.
Selfie shots. Let me tell my story.
I'm sorry.
It gets better.
Right? I apologize.
So I don't do that stuff for sure. I don't post my workouts. I don't do all that stuff. However, as I'm probably 3/4 of the way through my workout, I see this guy who's probably, I don't know, 5'11", probably about 220, something like that. And so he's doing all the show-offy type workouts, right? Like he's got the weighted vest and he's doing the pull-ups and then inverts to dips on top of the Smith machine. And then he's got, he's doing a weighted vest. Then he's doing push-ups on top of the dumbbells to balance himself. And he's got a videographer with him. So I'm like, all right, this is just odd, right? Like he ain't a trainer. He's not on staff. He's just here with a videographer. So I'm just like, all right, dude's just doing the most, but whatever. So I'm finishing up my workout.
Is this a former player?
Not to my knowledge. Okay. But he's probably...
I'm just asking.
He's probably early to mid-40s, maybe.
Oh,
yeah. So gracious. And then he's ripped up. Like, I ain't hating on duties. He ripped up whatever. So I was across machines from him. I was on the leg extension. I'm towards the end of my workout now. So I'm just trying to burn out. I'm trying to do lightweight, high reps on leg extension. Just trying to burn out. And so he gets my attention. He's like, hey, you gonna put some more weight on there?
Oh, shenanigans.
And I'm like, nah. I said, bro, I'm doing high reps. I'm burning. I'm about to get up out of here. Oh, man, I'm just messing with you, bro. I'm just messing with you. I'm like, bro, I wasn't gonna be offended. I'm just telling you, like, that's what my workout was. So he's on a bench press, right? So his videographer's on the way. And I see him, I think he put on maybe 265, so he had on two plates and probably had
265.
Yeah, 265, and so he puts his legs on the bench. So you know how you can do it, that targets your weight.
Shenanigans.
Oh, but it don't stop there. So he puts his.
He still
up.
Has the weight vest on.
He took the weight vest off.
Smart. Okay.
So his videographer's loading up like between sets because he had to change something out, whatever. And so
wasting a lot of battery.
Right. So he puts his feet on the bench. And then I'm thinking he's ripped up. So I'm thinking he's gonna kill this, whatever. Then I see him turn his grip, and he goes underhand grip.
Underhand?
Underhand. So he's underhand. So, typically your bench press like this. Yeah. Underhand, 265, legs up. I'm like,
This ain't gonna work out.
This is not gonna work. And guess what happened?
What happened?
It didn't work. So my man, who's been doing the most with the videographer.
They got it on film?
While he's filming, goes underhand grip, and his right hand, I don't know what happened, all of a sudden, shoot. Ah! Ask me what I did.
Oh, hell no. I ain't helping him. I'm watching him.
I was straight spectator. Yo, somebody need to help him.
I wouldn't have said that. You know what I would have said?
No, I said that in my mind. I didn't say it.
You know what I would have said? Hey, my man.
You might want to lighten up that way. So what I did, I put the hoodie back over my head, I went in the locker room, got my stuff, and I dipped.
You know what I would have said? I would have walked past him.
Stupid. I'm like, bro, it costs you, like my man Jay-Z said, it costs you nothing to pay me no mind. You worried about what I got on my weight.
It was a brother too, huh?
Oh yeah, it was. Stupid. Oh man, he had on the Hogan tank top that goes, you know, around your shoulders
you
and
do
all this.
What are these 22-inch?
What are you
gonna
do when this 265 falls straight on your pecs? Like, come on, bro. And you're doing all this. You're doing all this because you got a videographer.
So did they help him?
The videographer? Yeah, he put his camera down and he helped him out. And I was like, damn. But it wasn't me. I can tell you that now. It wasn't
I would have stayed and watched.
Because I'm like, bro, you come like you over here worried about everybody else flavor they Kool-Aid, and you ain't worried about yours.
You know, here's what it is. He worried about your flavor of the Kool-Aid, and he out here drinking Crystal Light. That what happened. At 265.
So, my man, I have no idea. First time seeing him, have no idea who he was. Mm-mm-mm. But that was tragic, bro. Sorry. Hope he didn't rip his pec. Hope he didn't do anything like that. But the moral of this story is, it pays to mind your business.
Mind your weight, son. Mind your weight. Who we got?
Coming up on the Cut to It podcast, we've got Mike Garofolo. He's got over 20 years experience covering the NFL, works for the NFL Network, and a native of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mike Garofolo on the Cut to It podcast. Get iced up. Smitty's version of Icebreakers, and you know him well enough that you don't know what this man may throw at you. So there may or may not be a follow-up. Just depends on what he has. Smitty, go ahead, give him the first one.
All right. This is an easy one. It's all about Mike Garofolo. So if you fail a test, you failed yourself.
I'm ready.
All right. What was your first car you drove?
I think it was...
You know or think? Why are you?
Well, because my mom had two cars, and I'm trying to remember the.
Oh my baller! Oh, humble brag. No, I had two cars.
She had two cars at two different times, and I'm trying to remember. Wait, but like literally the first car I ever drove, like literally got behind the wheel of.
Yeah.
It was a. This is a bad story already. Like you're getting me in trouble. Already you get me in trouble.
I mean, look, if you illegally drive, it's a recorded line. I don't want to, I mean, first car I had, I did not have a license. I bought it for $160, and it was a Dodge something.
Yeah, my mom usually let me drive a Crown Vic.
So here's my friend was, nobody knows this story. I mean, nobody. Two people know this story, me and my friend.
Okay, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people in here.
Plus the rest of the world.
And the rest of the world.
So he was banged up, and I didn't have a license and had never driven a car. And I'm like, bro, you can't drive us home. You cannot drive us home. There's no way. You are like, you're not seeing straight. And so I said, we got to leave the car here. We got to get a cab. And he's like, no, because my parents will know that I was drunk underage. And so now I got to get, like, the car has to be home. I have to get home in the car. So I drove home. I mean, that's the short version. And I had never driven a car ever before in my life.
What was it? What?
It was a Plymouth. It was a disgusting brown Plymouth.
Hatchback.
It was no hatchback. No hatchback.
They did have those hatchbacks.
They
though.
Did. Yeah.
No hatchback. It was a sedan. And I drove it, and I remember changing lanes in the middle of the bridge, and I asked him, I was like, dude, I don't know how this works. I'm not looking at my mirrors. Can I change lanes right now? He's like, yeah, you're good. And then I realized I listened to a guy that was incapacitated. And I heard,
you're good. Don't worry about it.
So we've all done stupid things when we were kids. I mean, it was stupid and semi-responsible because I was trying to get us home and get everybody safe and not in trouble and all that stuff. But probably should have called the cab and let him deal with the consequences.
I see what you're doing, trying to make yourself sleep better at night. Okay.
Everybody got to have the team dad.
Yeah. Except the team dad would have probably punished himself on that one because I shouldn't have drove. I'd never driven before. And I drove over a bridge. I went from state to state. That's a federal case now.
Our roads don't know. State to state.
What, How old were you?
17, 18 maybe. I didn't drive. I didn't have my license until I was 18.
Okay.
So I was probably 17-ish, 17, 18-ish.
Okay. Well, I like that. All right. The last movie you went to at the theater before COVID-19.
I have no earthly idea. I couldn't even guess.
That's the bananas part. I was literally like, I can't even remember the last movie I saw. But I do because it was a black movie. Harriet Tubman.
That's a good one.
Remember that coming out? That's how bad it is now.
You don't remember? We talked about it. It was a great movie.
But I didn't see it. I don't.
You know.
Well, let me think about this because the Oscar contenders this year, I think I saw them all at home. So Oscars 2019.
He's such an insider. That's why I heard him close his glasses, his glass case that he usually pops on. That's the glasses he uses, you know, when he's really hunkering down. He's about to get into
it. He's our first guest to ever Google the Get Ice Up questions.
This is Mike.
Yeah. Well, I want to get it right, right? So best.
Him and Ian Rappaport.
He's Googling right now. 2020.
Green Book, I saw on a plane. Black Panther, I saw on a plane. Klansman plane. Bohemian Rhapsody, I saw at home. I don't. A Star is Born, I saw it. I'm trying to remember. Roma, the favorite. I have no idea.
That was year four last time.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. This year, I definitely saw them. I definitely did not go to the movies this year, right? Because
I never did.
I honestly don't know. I'd have to.
All right. So where did you propose to your beautiful wife, Jessica?
The Big Apple Circus in the center ring, because that's where we went on our first date. And you'll love this story. So I said that's where she had told me, you know, don't do the stadium proposal. For some reason, she thought I was going to do a stadium proposal, which I never want to do. Listen, if you want to do that and that's romantic for you, go crazy. But I was never, ever going to do that. So I was worried that, and I didn't want to ask her at that point, be like, hey, remember when you said stadium proposal? What if I do it at a circus? Like, I think she just didn't want the stadium thing. But I was afraid that she was going to get mad at me if I did it in the middle of a public event. But the day that I asked her if we were like exclusive, we went to the circus that day. It was a Saturday afternoon in the city.
Whoa.
What?
So you asked her, are you exclusive? One, I mean, were you thinking about not being exclusive?
Right.
Are you, no. You were trying, you
I
were
think I've asked that with my wife now.
Yeah. Hey, are we exclusive?
Are we going?
Well,
that's such a non-African-American question.
Are we going stand?
I had never dated.
I love you, Mike.
I dated, but I was never in an exclusive relationship before my wife. Like I just, the longest I dated a girl was like 3 months maybe. And we just kind of dated. Yeah. We weren't exclusive. So I never really had a true, you know, girlfriend. I was always sports, work stuff. So I just really didn't, you know.
No, how old were you?
I'm 25.
So did so you're 25 years old. You're asking your girl, are we exclusive?
Well, it started with.
Did you like give her a paper?
Sir? No.
Yeah.
No. So you're not.
You check yes or no.
You're not. I mean, the moral of the story here is I didn't know. So Mike, we went to the circus. Then we met my cousin for dinner in the city. She and her friends met us because she went to Fordham and they were around. I said, "Come join us for dinner and whatever." And so she asked me when Jess snuck away for a second, she's like, so are you too exclusive? And I was like, I don't know. Like, what do I have to ask that? Or is that just kind of assumed? She's like, no, you got to ask her. So I said, okay. So I asked her on the way home. And to this day, she thinks that I was copping out by saying, oh, my cousin asked me. And then I didn't know. She's like, why couldn't you just ask me? I was like, cause I didn't know. And I was just saying, hey, by the way, she mentioned it to me. That's a good question. Are we exclusive? Anyway, so that was the first, that was 2006, I believe. And then 2009, we got engaged and I said, I want to do something special. So I contacted the guy at the Big Apple Circus, because that's where we, you know, I said, well, look, this is a fitting that I would ask her to marry me in a place where I asked her, were we exclusive? And I tried to barter with him.
Is this a real circus?
Yes. It's not like Ringling Brothers used to be. It wasn't in a big arena. It's kind of an old fashioned circus where they have animals and stuff, but it's more throwback type stuff. Like a juggler and stuff. So it's not,
they have like a tightrope.
Oh. Yeah. They got a tightrope, guy jumps off the, you know, a trapeze and all this stuff.
Oh, shucks.
Yeah, and it's under an actual tent. They put a big tent up in Lincoln Center. I did a deal with the guy. I said, listen, here's the deal. I'll tell you what. You let me do this, and I don't think I had to do this deal. You let me do this, I will get SNY, which is Sportsnet New York. I'll get SNY to do my weekly interview with Brandon Jacobs of the Giants from the Big Apple Circus. So you give me a little bit, and I'll give you a little pub in exchange. And he's like,
cool. Wheeling and dealing, right?
Always wheeling and dealing. This is about the barterest dude I know.
Yeah. So it gets better. So I proposed to my wife, knocked her socks off. She loved it, which was great. I was relieved. I was worried she wasn't going to like it. And then we set up a date like the following week for Brandon. And Brandon confirms with me, yeah, we're good, we're good, we're good. And then bails on me the morning of the show. And I got to get surgery on my tooth because he got hit by Albert Haynesworth. They got into a fist fight during the game. And so the guy was pissed, obviously. He had promoted it. He got a letter from a fan that was pissed because her kid showed up in a Brandon Jacobs jersey. So then I had to arrange for like Brandon to send the kid a note and a video and all that. I mean, it was worth it. And then we finally did it. We rescheduled and he showed up and we all did it, you know, and he was in the center ring. And yeah, so there's a lot that went into it, but it went well.
Three or four layers deep in all that.
Yeah. That's G. That's Mike G right there. I love me some Mike G. we argue on television, uh-huh. But I actually like him. He pushes me, I push him. So we really don't dislike each other as much as people.
I didn't think at all. You saying as much. I didn't think at all.
There's a few times I could have thumped you in your Adam's apple a few times, but
ouch.
I mean, yeah, you know, especially on live TV, you watch a man just grasp of air, you know.
Is it NFL Network or is it like Cobra Kai?
Just thump. Just a little thump. So last one. If you had to choose one thing to eat for the rest of your life, what would that be?
Assuming all things are, you know, we're not doing this based on health. Because if I had to, yeah, this is just, you got to eat something. It'd probably be pizza, right?
I like that one too. I like that.
Now, do I have one kind of pizza or can I vary the different kinds of pizza?
Sure, we're always living in it, brother.
So yeah, that's good. It gives me some variety. I can do a little veggie pizzas one day. I can do a little meat lovers the next day.
Oh, you can like that meat lover, so. Appreciate you coming on. We love to really just talk all sports, all the dynamics. So growing up, who was your team?
Eagles. Yeah. Who? I grew up the Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
Because I grew up in Philly, rooting for Buddy Ryan's team. And Sixers, not so much, but Flyers and Phillies, I'm still into. You can't be a fan. And I covered the Giants, and for some reason they found out, the fans did, I was from Philly, and it was an ongoing joke every year that they were, you know, you're an Eagles fan, and you heard about it, and you brought it up on air a few times, Steve. Mm-hmm. Busted me and Colleen about it. Her, it's true. She's still, because she's not a reporter, so she could still be a fan. Me, I'm a reporter. Yep. So, it was my fandom. Here you go. Here's where we cross paths. My fandom started to taper off as I would every now and then cover the Eagles, which still allowed me to kind of be a fan because mm-hmm. I wasn't, you know, entrenched with them. I just kind of helicopter in because I was covering everything in Philly. The 2003 championship game. That you guys came in and punched that Eagles team in the mouth And that's the last one that I was upset about. And I said, you know what? I can't.
True Philly fan.
You renounced your fandom after that.
True Philly fan, right?
Yeah. I mean, sort of. Yeah. That's probably the last game that I actually bottom had a rooting interest.
The bottom of the bottom. They will turn on their team.
So did you notice how at first he tried to position it like, you know, I'm a professional. He's a journalist. And I have, you know, journalistic standards. He has to not have a team. But it was really, at the end of that game, I ain't messing with them no more.
Yeah. Damn. Phillies.
We have to take a break, and more than anything, we got to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. Need that check.
I love Cut To It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. cuttoitpodcast.com.
Where are you from and a place you call your hometown?
Well, I'm from Philly. I mean, I used to walk to the Vet, Veterans Stadium. The Phillies games were dollar general admission. So you could go to a game for a dollar in the middle of the, and those were the cheapest seats, and you'd sneak your way down, obviously. And then they went to the World Series in 93, and the price went up to $5, which is a 500% increase, or is it 400%? I never get that right. But regardless, it was an increase that was a lot for a 14-year-old at the time. So that's my neighborhood. I wouldn't change a thing about where and how I grew up. I loved growing up in the city, in a neighborhood that was tightly knit. I learned a lot of things on the streets and on the playground that you don't learn in school, that you have to learn, life lessons. And I would never change a thing.
Tell us, like, what did you learn in the streets?
Well, when I say it that way, you start to think like, you know, the streets. It ain't the streets.
I knew what you meant, but I just took what you said and roll with it.
I figured I cut you off at the pass before you went.
I knew you wasn't slanging dope, bro. Chill out. I just meant you said you learn stuff in the streets, on the playground.
Mike Young Jeezy Garofolo.
Yeah. Hey, what's your name? My name is Mike, but they call me Mike. you got my cash? Right. I'm not talking about that. No. I'm just talking about really, you know, sometimes people will say the streets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you know now as parents, right? You can't have your kids hanging out with all kids because some kids will pick up cursing, will pick up bad habits from other kids, other places. So that's what I meant more as a parent perspective, not like, oh, you know, Mike Garofolo's a thug, like none of that.
Well, and this is something that my daughter's just turned 3, so we're not there yet by any stretch. But this is something that I wrestle with because I learned a lot. The most that I learned in life was by doing dumb stuff and making mistakes. And so, you know, I want to sit there and kind of tell my daughter along the way to not make the, but I think you have to in life.
Well, they're going to make it. We were in break earlier today, and my son Peyton is staff was asking, Sarah was asking, how is Steve as a dad? And he was like, oh, sarcastic. He was like, oh, he was great. You know, but we're just talking about how parenting and my style and all that stuff. And he made some mistakes, but it's really cool now seeing him 22, 23, kind of life is starting to evolve for him. Mm-hmm. But you got to kind of allow them
to fall flat on their face.
Yeah, but it's tough as a parent. Like, you don't want them to. Like, I'm like scared for him to fall on his face.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm scared to admit, like, I worry. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, man, he could, you know, even just him dating people. I'm like, oh, I got to choose the right one, get a prenup. Don't bring no scallywags home. You know, just my mind just goes down a rabbit trail to the point of like, if he brings a girl, if he ever brings a girl back over to the house, I'm literally like,
scallywag.
I'm like, what's she do? What her parents do? Where she live? Well, you know, what's her favorite color? All that stuff that I sabotage in my mind. Like, I ain't gonna like her.
Yeah, you're already going into it with a preconceived notion.
My preconceived notion is she ain't good enough.
Yeah. Look at you, dad.
I'm so territorial.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like to the point is like, I told him, look, if it ain't serious, don't bring the ass up to the house. Just straight up. You know, don't ask to come on no vacation. Hey, can if they last name ain't Smith, don't ask me. Shh, I don't care.
Yeah.
So I get it, bro. And your little girl's three. I only got one. If me and Angie had another child and it was a daughter, run me over.
Your daughter's a different man. And I'm right there with you. I'm right there.
We're a month away from number two.
I know.
I told you that, man. Yeah. We got two coming.
Yeah.
So, Mike, tell us about your family dynamic. How'd you growing up?
My family dynamic. We were a family of five. I had an older sister and a younger brother, all with extremely different interests, but we were still tight. I was really the only sports fan. My mother and I were the only sports fans. No, that's not true. My sister a little bit. But mostly my mother and me into sports in the family. My brother and father, not so much, which was weird, right? Like you're supposed to learn sports from your dad and all that stuff and all those stereotypes. No, that's not how it was in our family at all. And my brother was 3 years younger than me, my sister 2 years older. We had my parents just celebrated their 46th wedding anniversary yesterday.
Wow. Congratulations. Wow.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You have a tight family. Where is your family's place of origin?
Nationality, which I don't think that's the word. Is it nationality or is it heritage? Is Italian. My great-grandparents were born in Italy. My grandparents were born here. And we've been, both sides of the family, been Philly all the way. I don't know why they settled here or there, excuse me. I'm up in North Jersey now. See, that's the fun part of it all is my sister moved five doors away from my parents. My brother, when he got married, moved across the playground. I moved to North Jersey. You'd think I moved to, you know, Russia, the way that they reacted. I mean, I'm only an hour and a half away. Relax. We're not that far. We're not that far away. Yeah, we're still a very tight knit family.
We're used to having, you know, we'll have sports folks, but we want every aspect, every dynamic of sports. We've had Colleen on here and now we have you. And I love having you on here because it's a different perspective, mm-hmm. right? You love sports so much that you got involved into it. So take us down that road of how your career began.
You know, I knew my athletic ability was not going to take me to places where they actually pay me money to play sports. So I think I made that determination early that I pretty much knew exactly what I wanted to do.
How'd you know exactly what you wanted to do?
Because I would watch the broadcasts and see what the reporters or announcers or analysts would bring to the table and say, yeah, I like that. That's cool. I always loved kind of putting on a show when I was a kid. I kind of liked the notion of what went into it and, you know, how these guys brought their information and let it out on national TV.
Didn't know that. I like that.
Yeah. I appreciated it from afar. And then I got to college and my father said to me, well, why don't you check? Because everybody's doing internships. Oh, I'm going to do an internship here, an internship here, an internship. I said, okay. There was one for, they called them producers, but basically they were we were board ops and engineers who ran the board and answered the phones for WIP radio in Philly. We would answer the calls and get the calls. We would basically run the whole show. I answered the ad. They called me back. I had an interview. I was a junior. It was my second. I was going into my second semester of my junior year.
At what college?
At LaSalle University. I need you to
I had to refresh your memory on television.
You're
letting your fans not hear the important part.
I have fans?
Yes, you have all
if
three.
If not, you're going to get some after this.
Yeah.
There we go. That's what I'm that's why I'm doing this.
As if the mess up thing that Steve said. Nah.
We mess with each other all the time. You know what Garofalo does really well?
What's it?
Plays victim. That's why he giggled too. He plays. Oh, yeah. You're yelling at me. I get more fans every time you're yelling at me.
Man, people take it so serious. I'll get a tweet. Man, how you let Steve Smith do that to you? I don't know, man. That was pretty bad. Why don't you follow me?
People take that so serious, though.
Like, oh, they do.
Y'all have, like, with anything, like, whether it's you and Steve or whether it's Steve, when you on with any of the guys on Thursday night, like, that's always the public response. They don't like each other. Like,
yeah.
Just tell us, man, relax.
Which is good and bad. Like, you want people to be into it, but you don't want people to be too serious and right. recognize a joke for a joke. But, you know.
So we just mess with, like, he literally will say, hey, I'm going to say this, and we'll be in agreement.
Yeah,
I'm like,
already talked about it before.
I'm like, I'm going to say that was dumb.
Yeah.
And he's like, these great. Yeah. Now, some of it has been authentic BS.
For sure.
Like, we got in an argument on TV.
This
that
is going to be Ryan Tannehill.
So we're in the green room. Good morning, football weekend on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. Ryan Tannehill doesn't play well. And he literally says in the green room, this is now, you usually got in after me, so... What, this is like 5:45. Now I've eaten my breakfast, my waffles with my syrup. And he comes in and he's like, oh my gosh, can you believe how piss poor?
Why does he have a British accent?
I don't know. And he's like, Mike goes, they look like a high school team.
Oh, I remember this.
I flipped my lid. I'm like, what? Yeah. He's like, yeah, high school team. I'm like, all the damn practice they have.
Yeah.
And then I was like, see, that's what's the matter with you reporters. Had the index finger.
And then all of a sudden you weren't in the media anymore.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden you're rose.
I just took my mouthpiece out of my mouth. Like, he's like, what? You know, what? I'm like, that's BS.
Yeah.
He's like, no, it's not. You see how they play? I said, yeah, I've seen some high school games. Uh-huh. I've been to some Friday night games. They don't look that good. He's like, no. And what does he do? He doubles down.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We go
on air.
And said it. And I said the same thing. Except I was
except it was live.
Oh, I was hot. And he thought. The second time, uh-huh. I was going to be less animated. I was hot.
He thought you got it out in the green.
I was hotter because I was like, oh, you're going to try me on TV too? Bro, it's just like some of the stories we have.
But listen, don't think that you say it like I expected that, oh, I'll get you in front of the cameras and I'll never do that.
I wasn't saying it like it was a gotcha. I just meant as a former player mm-hmm. and then as an analyst, I mean, as an insider, we have these conversations, good and bad, that goes from his journalistic point of view. I'm part of that journalistic point of view, but also as a former player's point of view. And we kind of battle between the journalist's information and how he takes it and dissects it. And then how that comes across as a former player mm-hmm. in which why reporters and players sometimes have this friction,
right?
Because the reporter's like, I have to explain it like I'm talking to my 80-year-old grandmother. And the player's like, first of all, your 80-year-old grandmother isn't watching the game.
Right, she ain't part of this demographic.
Yeah, so it's always this dynamic that we go through. It's pretty interesting, though.
Gotcha.
Well, so just to be clear, we're not going to spend a ton of time. We'll go back and forth on all these things. But what I was saying was not even toward the players, by the way. I was saying their offense, they weren't stretching the ball down the field. I don't even remember what team it was, but it was like,
I don't either.
There were no passes over 10 or 15 yards. And I said, that was like a high school offense
and we still got into it. And I was like, well, I'm not saying that they look like high school players and they're not playing hard. What I'm saying is you can't play that way. And he didn't care. We were into it by that
point. But I wasn't the only one, though, was I?
I believe Mike Robb may have backed you up. Was it Mike Robb?
Yes, you had some backup.
No, but it was – Mike is different, and I'm learning – not Mike is different, but I'm learning in TV the perspective of a beat writer or the perspective of an insider. Mm-hmm. And they're all about information. And players, we're all about process.
Yep.
And when those two are on television, they don't operate the same way. They're it's like a
different perspective.
I don't mean to sound this in a mean way, and I'm not saying he's the man or the female, I'm the man or female. It's literally Mars and Venus, husband and wife. It just, we don't see it the same. Uh-huh. We literally see it totally opposite, right? He sees as, oh, that cup is half full. I see as, no, I'm still thirsty.
Yeah.
Right? It's so different.
So let me tell a Tannehill story, because that's another illustration of what you don't do, and Steve will call you out for it on national TV. So I'm at the Dolphins training camp practice in middle of July. It's like 90 degrees and humid as all hell. Sun's beating down on me. I'm off camera while they're practicing at 2 in the afternoon for some reason. Like, it's not like I could do a morning practice or late afternoon where it's nice and cool. And Steve's somewhere else.
I was actually in Kent. It was hot as fish grease.
Okay. I say, you know, I'm talking about Tannehill, and I'm referring to the year before when Gase had to back it down with how much he fed Tannehill, how much he's allowing him to do at the line of scrimmage. And I'm saying, you know, what Gase did was strip it all the way down, and now he wants to rebuild it. Because you got to remember, this is a guy that's used to the way Peyton Manning did things. And I'm telling you, Steve's yelling, get him on camera. I want to see his face. Meanwhile, the sweat is just pouring down my face. I was enjoying the fact that I was off camera. I'm dying. And now I come on camera, schwitzing and looking horrendous, probably making it look even worse. That, like, oh, Steve's calling him out, and now he's melting on camera, when really I was just hot because of the heat.
Yeah.
And he's like, don't you ever put Ryan Tannehill's name in the same sentence with Peyton Manning. And I said, no, I wasn't competing. I don't care. You don't. How could you? I heard about that for months and years. I think I'm still hearing about it.
Yeah. How did it work out for Adam Gase and Ryan Tannehill that year?
Touche.
Hello? Is this thing on? Is this thing on? Hello?
I didn't. Again, I don't know how many times I got to tell you. I'm not telling you that he was going to play like Peyton Manning. I am telling you that Gase was used to a certain thing. Listen, if anything, I was highlighting bad coaching, right? That he was expecting a certain level of Peyton Manning from a guy who wasn't Peyton Manning.
Well, hey, is
I like the way you compiled that narrative.
Hey, is Adam Gase really a good coach right now? Because he ain't doing
well. Well, maybe the Jets, among others, should have seen the writing on the wall. How about that?
That's a whole different conversation right now.
I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I don't know if I want to do this, but all right. I was super excited. Super excited to have you on here because I love what you do and how you do it. I also give you an opportunity because you will tell us how it is. And mm-hmm. I wanted you to tell us everything that's involved.
Yeah.
A lot of times people see us on television. They think, one, that the producers feed us all our information.
That is easy.
Yep. That is easy. And it's, imagine having, I mean, we've had dinners together where we're both talking to different sources on two teams that are playing each other. He's talking to a source for maybe a coach somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then I'm talking to a player on the opposite team.
Right.
And they're discussing a lot of different things. And we're both talking And I've learned, I've learned from Mike how to get a little bit more comfortable and settle in myself on having sources and dialoguing and talking, because I have been considered this very high strong player who doesn't have the ability to look neutral or think neutral. And, you know, and I think before I became on TV, Mike was the same. Mike kind of saw me that same way. And as he's gotten to know me, I am high strong. I am intense. However, I study my butt off and I work hard and I try, and I am to some degree teachable and I try to learn. He's been one of those guys that I've learned from. And at times, even in competition, have broken stories that the insiders usually get, because I do go to training camps and talk, and I go to training camps and I desire to go to training camps and I go to the combine. I go to combine an extra day and a half, 2 days, and I'm in the suites talking to general managers and coaches. And so I've learned by Rap Sheet and Mike Garofolo on how and what, and we've spent numerous evenings. Hey, Mike, how do you do this? And, you know, he's walking me through it. So I've been really excited to have him on to educate us on what is really an insider.
Right? We've learned a lot from each other. Me probably more from Steve, because, you know, it's been good to have. And they asked us when we first started the show, you know, what are you most excited about? I said, I'll tell you right now. It's a unique opportunity for me to work in the studio alongside two guys in Mike Robb and Steve Smith. Remember, we were at dinner at your favorite steak place in Jersey. And I said, because if I say something that doesn't pass the smell test, they're going to let me know on live TV. Steve more than Mike Robb. Mike tends to pull a few more punches because that's his personality. But he'll let me know at times too. But you know, that's been a good thing for me. I'll
go to bat for him though.
Oh yeah. Well, no. Yeah. It goes both ways. Of course.
If people come at him like, hey, it's like my little brother. Ain't nobody going to beat up on Mike, but
you
me.
Can. Yeah. But yeah, nobody.
Don't come to the family. Now we with the fishes.
With the fishes.
Well, they hire me WIP. And now the point I was originally making was, you know, people went and did internships. And I chased a different path. I was actually working while I was in college. And I got a better experience because mine was hands-on. A lot of these internships, you were just doing stuff that wasn't hands-on work. You were just kind of hovering and in the area. I'm glad that I followed my father's advice because it allowed me to really start working in radio while I was still in school. My first shift, I'll tell you this, was New Year's Eve, 7 to midnight, because nobody wanted that shift. I'm sorry, it was actually 7 to 1 a.m. So I was there for midnight and beyond. The only person in the entire studio, not even a host, because everything was on tape. And nobody wanted that shift. And I'm the new guy, so I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah, I guess I got to take this shift. So I'm 20 years old, and all my friends are out getting smashed, and I'm working my first shift at WIP Radio. And here's the funny part. At midnight, From 11 to 1, everything was on these reels, the old style reels that you had, you know, where you'd get the tape going, you hit the button, whatever. And midnight comes, and I hit the reel to start it right then, and I hear boom, oh. Boom, 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 like right as I hit the button. And so this is 2000 into 2001. So my mind immediately was like, oh my God, it's Y2K. A year later, like they thought it was 2000, but I thought maybe they were wrong and it was actually 2001. And oh my God, I just blew up the building, right? And it turns out it was the fireworks from nearby Penn's Landing at midnight, but it scared the bejesus out of me. But that I screwed up so many times in those early days and put some stuff on air and had a bunch of dead air and learned along the way. I was there for 4 years, almost 4 years, I think. And I started when I graduated college in 2002, 2 years into being at the radio. I said, well, I'm it's a slow Sunday. I'm doing a show. I'm looking across at the host. And I said, I don't know if I want to do this. I said, if I did want to do this, I knew I wanted to be in sports media. But I said, if I do want to do this, the guys they put on the air are former writers. So I got to get out and write. And I mentioned it to a couple of the guys and they said, hey, call this guy. Rob Motti, who's the AP sports writer
for all of Philadelphia, sports editor. He's the only full-time guy, covers all the sports. He used to work here. Let him know that, you know, you reached out and we told you to. Yeah. So I reach out to him. He says, come on up to Eagles training camp day one, and I'll meet you and we'll talk. So I go and I drive up Lehigh, 2 hours, drive all the way up there, meet him. And it through the course of conversation, I learned that he was in my he's from my neighborhood, number one. Number two, he went to my high school. And number three, his brother was really good friends with my neighbor who had this channel in Philly called Prism. It was this premium channel that my father, he didn't pay for it, but my neighbor did. And that's where all the home Sixers, Flyers, Phillies home games. So I go to my neighbor's house to go watch the game, even though those guys were older. And so once he found all this out, he really took me under his wing and he allowed me to cover things. I mean, my first assignment was covering Eagles training camp by myself. The first day, I think they made Lito Shepard available, the rookie first round pick. And so through those two jobs, I'm giving you the shortest version possible. I got recommended for the Star Ledger job in 2004 to go cover the Giants. I went into the interview process thinking there's no way I'm getting this job. So I was loose, right? Because I didn't think I had a shot. And probably because I was loose, I interviewed well. And I, you know, I said, I can do this. And then they hired me and I said, are you nuts? I can't do this.
Now I got to back it up.
Are you nuts?
Sell right. He was out there shooting his shot.
You believed all that? You kidding me? And I'll tell you what, that was an education. First time living away from home in an area where I knew nobody, with Tom Coughlin as the new coach trying to lay down a law, and he's got no time to suffer fools in the media. The players are hating him. The team was doing well with Kurt Warner, and then they pull him and they put Eli in, and everything went to crap. I mean, that was I learned more in that 1 year than I probably learned in, you know. And so that was pretty much my start in sports media.
It's amazing. You fast forward 18 years later and we're in San Francisco working, me, Colleen, and Mike. Mm-hmm. Only thing we were missing was Mike Robb. Mm-hmm. And we're in San Francisco and we're walking around and I'm, you know, I got my notepad and he has his notepad and he's like, what are you watching? And we just went through the whole thing, like mm-hmm. telling him what I watch and why I see this and, you know, why I'm looking for these things. And it's funny, we go back, right? I remember going back because I still save all my training camp notes uh-huh. as reference through that season. And me and Mike Jeezy, we're sitting there talking. I'm like, bro, look at this. And he was like, what are you seeing? I'm like, look at that corner. Look at the receiver. He's like, yeah, and typical Mike, uh-huh. right? Typical insider, beat writer, reporter. He's like, the receiver's pissed because he's not getting the ball. I'm like, no, bro. Why is he not getting the ball? He's like, I don't know why. You remember this, Jeezy?
Mm-hmm.
We were watching, and they were emphasizing, right? Emphasizing throwing the ball deep down the field. So they're running double moves, and Jimmy G doesn't throw the double move. He throws the check down. Why is that key? Why do you have to emphasize throwing the ball deep? That's like emphasizing you're a baker baking. If you're a baker, you bake.
Yeah.
If you're a quarterback that has a $75 million contract, they emphasize throwing the ball deep. Mm-hmm. That's part of what you do, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe it's something you don't do. Huh.
So, Mike, how did you make the transition from writing from the Star Ledger to now where you are with NFL Network and being on their programming?
Well, I went to school for mass communication. What's interesting is at my school was a liberal arts university at LaSalle, and you had to have a wide-ranging curriculum. And so even outside of your major, you had to have a wide-ranging thing. And then inside your major, you couldn't just take one track. You had to have all kinds of communication. That's what they made you do. Which I hated at the time, but then I came to understand that communication is about different ways of actually communicating with people. So it's a smart way of doing things. And so I had to take public relations classes and advertising and script writing and screenwriting, like movie screenwriting, news writing. I took everything, except for journalism. I didn't take journalism. I don't know why I didn't take it. So what's interesting to me is I had all these video and audio production classes, and yet I wound up starting in my full-time career doing the thing that I didn't take, which was journalism, which I had to learn on the job, which was fine. I mean, those lessons you learn quickly, or you don't learn them, and you're just going to be eaten up if you don't learn them. The first year goes by on the beat, and toward the end of the first year, the producer who had this roundtable show with all the writers, he actually worked for the Giants. It was a Giants production. He said, "Hey, we do this show on MSG Network called Giants Online." I said, "Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, it's great." He goes, "Would you like to be on it?" I said, "Yeah, sure." He didn't get to me till the next year. I did it probably a couple weeks into the next season. We do the show. I'm walking off, and he's like staring at me and walking toward me. And I'm like, "Is he about to tell me you're never coming back? Like, what's he?" And he goes, "You're really good at this." And I was like, "Oh, well, thank you." And he's like, no, like, really good at this. I was like, "Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it." I said, "Frankly, this is what I am trained in. You should be surprised I could do the other thing, the writing." Like that's the one that I actually had to learn on the job and figure out how to do as I went along. A couple of years later, the Giants win the Super Bowl. That's another thing, by the way. I was really fortunate to cover a team that won 2 Super Bowls in 4 years, because that helps you. That thrusts you as a local beat writer into the national spotlight, and people notice your work. So I got to give Tom Coughlin and Eli Manning and everybody that won those 2 Super Bowls credit and thanks, because that allowed me to kind of display some of my abilities along the way. But after they win the first Super Bowl, SNY, who I mentioned earlier, Sports Network New York, they would send out, they had a Jets affiliation. So they had a devoted Jets reporter, but every day they would send out a different reporter to the Giants. And that person didn't really know what was going on, because they're not in the locker room. They're not following this stuff. One of those reporters, by the way, at one time was Scott Hansen, who actually did a really good job when he came out. Now the NFL Red Zone host. And so I pitched to them. I said, "Listen, why don't you have me do it? I'm here every day. I've got a little bit of TV background. Let me audition. I'll do your daily reports. You don't have to send a reporter out here every day. You don't have to pay for somebody's travel, because I'm at every game. You just have to send a camera and a producer." I said, "So that'll save you money. I make a little money myself, right? You know, but it'd be more convenient for you." And they said, "Well, thanks, but we're good, right?" Hold on. This is great. About 2 months later, I get an email from a woman at SNY, not the person that I had talked to, a different woman, who says, "Hey, we were thinking."
Oh, they got a great idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We were thinking.
We were thinking.
You know, maybe, and like laid out my whole case for why that we should do it. And I, you know what I replied? I said, "That's a tremendous idea. I'd love to talk to you." And that was my early lesson, that particularly in TV, it's mostly important whose idea it is. And if you want to get done what you want to get done, sometimes you got to pretend that it wasn't your idea. And that's what I did. So I started to do a bunch of TV for them. I went after the Giants won their second Super Bowl. This is another long story. I'll give you the short version. I went to USA Today for a year. And then I jumped to Fox. Fox Sports 1 launched in 2013, I believe it was. And I was there for 3 years. And then made the jump to NFL Network. And here we are now.
Our last segment is called Deep Three. And basically what Deep Three is it's three questions in order to get a deeper take on you, who you are as a person, not necessarily a reporter, but who you are as a person. So Smitty, go ahead and give them the first question.
So the first question is, when you are like old as dirt, 95 years old, what do you want people to say about you as an insider or as a reporter or just Mike Garofalo?
Well, we'll start with the first part. I would say that I want them to say that, he was fair. You could trust him. If he made a mistake, he owned up to his mistake. He wasn't always right, but he tried his hardest to be. As a person, you know, I want to be, he was a good family man, a good father, a good husband. If they can say that, my work on this earth will be complete.
What do people not know about you?
that I'm actually probably kind of a shy guy, a shy individual.
Hmm.
My wife
really
says it all. Yeah, my wife says it all the time. She's like, we all thought you were kind of weird. I said, what do you mean? She's like, well, you didn't talk much. You asked a lot of questions and you observe. And that's the way I come. Like, some people think that, or have thought over the years, that I'm not a nice person because I come off in a certain way when I first meet somebody. I don't offer a lot. And I kind of let them show their hand, and then I kind of, you know, start to reveal my personality a little bit more. And that sometimes rubs people the wrong way. And I've tried to kind of do whatever I can to offset that a bit. But yeah, I would say that that would surprise a lot of people.
What's your big goal? Not in work, in life.
Listen, to me, I've kind of taken on this whole fatherhood thing with a, you know, you're molding your child's life, but you're also, they're here to teach you as much as you're here to teach them, if not more the other way. And you start to see things in them that you realize about yourself, and you know, you want to correct it in them, but really you got to correct it in yourself first, and they will follow. So I think that that's where I am right now with regard to parenthood and understanding what it's about. And if I could become a better person through parenthood, I know it'll go the other way to my children. And so I'd say that that's probably one of my bigger goals in life right now.
Do you relate to NFL Network in a similar way to your NFL teammates?
No, because it's different. I think
how so?
Because with NFL team, the playing the NFL, you see what it is, right? You see a guy lined up, you see a right guard that gets beat, who's having a tough day. You can't hide from it. There's no script. There's not a producer who maybe turned on their own camera. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
In TV, you can sometimes, and I don't want to say hide in a negative way, but you can cut your words shorter. You can maybe not talk, or maybe
you're talking not, in terms of performance.
Yeah, okay. not be included in that dialogue, mm-hmm. right? Because I don't like the player, or I don't feel comfortable talking about the content or the subject. In sports, you can, mm-hmm. right? You can't hide or change or remove yourself. Like, if you have to, let's just say, you know, current right now, you got to go against Aaron Donald. Mm. Nah, can't miss that one, right? Your editor cannot, your producer can't help you. The makeup person cannot give you makeup. they ain't no anti-shine. Like, you are in the trenches,
right.
And you are solo. You got number 99 from the Los Angeles Rams on your head.
Gotcha.
And it's just you. Right, in TV, I think you can support each other, you know, kind of like what a coach is on the sideline. Like, hey, do your best. In TV, it's such a different dynamic.
In which would you say you've built the strongest relationships, NFL Network or playing in the league?
I think both.
Yeah,
I think because I've switched over to journalism, guys are asking, you know, how are you? Well, I'm still Steve now.
Yeah.
But I'm not into the gotcha or making you look bad. Mm-hmm. But I'll say, hey, you know, we're gonna be real now. We're not gonna sugarcoat it, but we're not going to put it out there to where we're all embarrassed.
Okay.
So I try to do that line where people know they're getting a reel from me. But also I've had general managers, I've had coaches tell me things. I'm like, this is great information, but are they telling me this? Why,
what do they want me to do with this?
Yes. Are they testing me?
And what should
me?
I do with it?
Yes. Are they testing me?
Yeah.
Like, I've had some reporters who state this about a team, and a team would call me and say, why is that dude saying that? Yeah. And I've had to say, hey, this team is calling me and telling me this is not completely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Boss, are you okay with me going on there? Because I still have these individuals who are looking at me
as a holder of that information.
As a holder of that information, and saying that's not the complete truth.
Yeah.
So do I?
What do you do in that moment?
Do I lay that that reporter out to say, hey, basically, Johnny, you're a liar because I spoke to that team and this is what they told me? Mm-hmm. Or do I not say anything and the team now is there upset at me because I haven't said anything? So I've been at times caught in the middle. And I've kind of sometimes, luckily, I haven't been on air. So I'm like, whew, I ain't on air for a week, so it ain't my problem.
But that's different.
Right? There was one time I was off air in July because we were moving and I was not scheduled to be on. We were in a rental. And I didn't say anything. And luckily, I wasn't on air, so I didn't have to really dispute what was stated. But I was on the phone with my boss, like, hey, this team is calling me saying this isn't correct. Mm-hmm. They're telling me, they called me on Thursday night at 11:45 p.m. saying blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh. Wow. And so I get off the phone with them at 1 a.m., at 12 a.m. Angie's asleep. She's like, are you still? I'm like, yep. And then I got to call my boss, talking to him. He's like, well, so just kind of as crazy as. There's a lot of stories that I've heard. I'm like, I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Mm-mm, don't tell me.
I don't know. I don't want to know where the bodies are buried.
I don't even want. Don't tell me nothing. I don't want to know his name, her name, his. Nope. No, thank you. Nah. I'm not listening. You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut To It. Cut To It with Steve Smith Sr. That is me. Is a production of Cut To It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut To It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Cho. From Balto Creative Media, Cut To It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck. Production manager Sarah Pollock. Theme music by Alex Johnson. Lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton. You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. 'Cause you know it's on. It's on.